Okay, great. Excellent. Okay, good. So official welcome back, everyone. We're still in the middle here of Perek Yud Aleph and Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. We are dealing with miscellaneous topics regarding food prep and the like on Shabbos. When we last left off, I think this was the last item that we left off on. We were discussing soda, making seltzer on Shabbos. Baruch Hashem, we discovered some heterim for. We spoke about how there's the possibility that maybe this would be an act of molid, that maybe this would be considered to be the creation of a brand new substance, as opposed to simple, let's say, food prep, when we just take ingredients that already exist, and we're really not doing much to them, especially on Shabbos. We're not really changing their makeup, their chemical makeup, or anything like that, because of course we're not really cooking. We're just sort of reconstituting them in some different mode or format, but the actual ingredients are the same fundamentally. Maybe there'd be a difference when it comes to making seltzer on Shabbos, in that it would be considered molid. So there have been poskim of the past who have suggested such a thing. We saw last week Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa is matir. Contemporary poskim seem to be matir, seem to say this is acceptable. So the truth is, I think we discussed this at an earlier point, pretty short at an earlier point in the shiur last week, but the question was posed about what about along the lines of infusing gas into edible substances. So what about whipped cream? What about whipped cream, and specifically whipped cream in a can on Shabbos? So a number of considerations here. I actually came across a great article written by actually a Rebbe of mine, former Rebbe of mine in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Daniel Mann, wrote a great article about all things related to this issue. So a number of issues, a number of areas of concern here. One of which, again, is potentially this same concept of molid when it comes to the creation of really a brand new product. Again, usually we think along the lines of molid when it comes to really fundamentally changing the makeup of a food item, which we usually associate maybe with heat. That heat would be required, which obviously is usher on Shabbos, and therefore we just sort of park that, and we consider maybe molid in other areas, but less so when it comes to food prep. But the reality is that is something that needs to be grappled with. Probably to a greater degree than needs to be grappled with when it comes to, let's say, just making seltzer. When it comes to making seltzer, you have a little bit of gas that's dissolved in water, but the liquid fundamentally is the same. It's water, it's carbonated water. You're not really changing the form to such a great degree when it comes to water, when it comes to the transformation of water into seltzer. When it comes to cream and whipped cream, it's a little bit different. So basically what happens when you pull the trigger on that whipped cream can is you are introducing pressurized gas into the actual cream, or I don't even know what to call it, because at least the frum version is all parve. So whatever, ungodly substance is inside of that can. So when you inject it with gas, which is exactly what's taking place, so that has the potential to be problematic in terms of molid. It would be difficult to say that it really is. Obviously, there is not a huge canon of poskim that deal with this issue directly. It's a rather novel concept. And that's actually helpful in terms of being makil, that when it comes to molid, classically, we're talking about really fundamentally changing the form and changing the substance. So Rav Mann actually quoted a conversation in conversation with Rav Willig, Rav Mordechai Willig. Rav Willig felt that that could not really be construed as molid, that it wasn't considered to be a substantive enough change from a thick liquid, even to a foam, that probably was not really considered to be an actual act of molid. Maybe there would be those who would argue and would view that as being molid. There are poskim who have weighed in certainly on the question of creating bubbles on Shabbos, which is generally a practice that at least like adults, try to refrain from, that going from a liquid to an actual, still a liquid, but a soap bubble may well be considered to be an act of molid. Maybe this is a little bit more similar, probably even less so. It's not even like a foam. It's really just a, I mean, it is a foam, but it's just a different substance that's not That's not all that dissimilar to the original liquid. Issue number one. Issue number two, remember that when we spoke about whipping cream last time, and I'm pretty sure this is where it actually came up in the shiur, when we were speaking about scrambling or whipping anything, the concern, at least in part, was that you are doing something that is clearly, or usually at least, a preparatory phase of actual cooking. That was the problem with scrambling eggs. Very difficult to say, obviously, that that would be the case with whipped cream, because it's meant to be an actual finished product. Other potential considerations, maybe this would be considered to be an act of lush, an act of leisha. Leisha is when you do something to some sort of substance, and maybe we'll tackle that in a couple of topics from now. But when you do something to a substance that changes its consistency, I think we actually did leisha maybe together in one of the previous iterations of this same shiur. But leisha, lush, kneading, usually deals with combining different agents. Here, the other agent that you're combining is gas. It's hard to say that that's really certainly a classical case of leisha. You can sort of fall on either side of this fence. It seems that there are very, very strong grounds to be makil here, more than anything, because it's not especially clear that it's usser, which is maybe a funny thing to say. But when it comes to new innovations and inventions, sometimes this is just the scenario in which we find ourselves, that there isn't really a wealth of information or a wealth of material that declares clearly that it's usser, and it's the sort of thing that can very easily slip through the cracks. So you could point to any number of issues. You could point to the molad issue. You could potentially point to the lush issue if you were interested in saying that you should be machmir here. But it certainly seems that there are very solid grounds to be makil. If you want to use a can of whipped cream on Shabbos, you'd certainly be within your rights to. With that, any questions on that? Feel free to speak up. But otherwise,
thank you. Just thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, great. Absolutely. Enjoy your dessert.
We will.
Okay. Perfect. And you can even have them with alphabet noodles and all that. Okay.
Okay. We'll try that combination.
Awesome. Great. I take no blame. All credit, no blame. So let's take a look. Let's take a look at Oslam Midvav here. So we continue in, again, it's like this miscellaneous potpourri of different Hilchos Shabbos and Yanim when it comes to food prep. So what he's dealing with now is actually something like either a roast or maybe like a stuffed capon or that kind of thing. If you have different types of food that are closed together, stitched closed with string of some sort, kagon me'ayim, there's something about it. And I know that, I don't know, it's just a matter of how it lands on the ear. Somehow when you hear the word kishka, at least I do, probably because Yiddish is far from my native language. So I hear kishka and my first thought goes to food. And then when you say, oh, like you have to feel it in your kishkas, okay, so your kishkas means your intestine, but really first and foremost, kishkas are food. Somehow or another, when I read the word me'ayim, it makes my me'ayim turn over. Me'ayim are intestines, me'ayim are innards. So he's speaking about kishka. It's just something about seeing it in another, in another language that hits home just exactly what we're talking about. So kagon me'ayim, like kishka, like in intestines, of mimula'im. Or let's say stuffed chicken. Let's say you're eating them. By the way, in Eretz Yisrael, I think it's actually illegal here, but in Eretz Yisrael is the only place where I've had actual kishka, where it's still put in the animal case, where it's still put in the me'ayim, where it's still put in the actual kishka. Another Rebbe of mine in Eretz Yisrael, I remember going to his house for Shabbos, and he had like the emes hazach, like a real coil of kishka that was like rolled up, coiled up in the top of the chalent pot. So that was an experience. So at any rate, so it's tied off at the ends. So can you cut off those tied ends? Because shebola echomehem, when you want to eat them, mutter lachtoch hasachut b'sakin o b'misparayim. So it's mutter to cut the string either with a knife or with a pair of scissors. So I think we've spoken about this before when it came to other kalim, but it's worth just dealing with the potential muktzah aspect here. Obviously, a knife, if a knife is something that you're using normally and ordinarily, either at the table or in the kitchen for other food prep, no problem cutting that string. Meaning to say that cutting of the string itself is not an issue of korea, and it's not an issue of mechatech when you are cutting it, much the same way we spoke about opening packages before, just to be able to get inside and basically leaving everything else for waste. That's not a problem. Issue of using misparayim, of using scissors, is really an interesting issue, or it's at least an interesting question. Generally speaking, should probably be assumed that scissors are a kli shemalachta la'isser. So we've spoken about this before. It's good to just review every time it comes up. Kli shemalachta la'isser is that sort of kli, which on the one hand could be used for something mutter, but ordinarily, typically, usually is used for something usser. I think scissors would probably fall under that category. Ordinarily, what do you use scissors for? You use scissors really for the malacha probably of mechatech, in order to cut things into proper sizes. You also use scissors just to make waste of, let's say, something that's connecting two items that you want to be severed, you want to be cut, and really you ultimately want to go in the garbage. But usually, I think misparayim scissors are really made, manufactured, typically used for purposes that are usser on Shabbos. Even if you speak about kitchen shears, I think usually, not always, but usually, I think anyway, this is at least how it goes in my kitchen, are used more commonly and more frequently for raw meat, I think, than cooked meat. For roasted meat, for roast chicken, usually it's being used on raw meat, which would make it a kli shemalachta la'isser. Ordinarily, what do you use this for? Typically, ordinarily, you use this for something that's usher on Shabbos. You can't really handle raw meat on Shabbos. You can't prep raw meat on Shabbos. You can't cook, obviously, raw meat on Shabbos. So having said that, here again is the rule of thumb. If you have a kli that ordinarily is used for purposes that are usser, but could also be used for purposes that are mutter, so if you're using it for a mutter purpose, it is mutter to move it. It's mutter to pick it up. You just need to be mindful of the following. Once it's put down, it can't be moved. So you need to be conscious of that reality. If you're going to employ scissors, even let's say, if you're using kitchen shears, let's say, to cut roast chicken, should probably be presumed that kitchen shears are actually a kli shemalachta la'isser. If it becomes the best and the easiest way, and more on that in just a second, but the best and the easiest way to cut through even whole roast chicken so you can use it on Shabbos, just be mindful of where you put it down afterwards. You want to put it down, let's say, in the sink or where it's out of the way, because if you put it down on the counter, you really can't move it afterwards until you have a need either for those actual shears again, or until you have a need for a mutter purpose, obviously, or you have a need for that spot where these shears actually are. I think we went through this when it came to Hilchos Muktzah, but simply the need or the I don't want to call it compulsion, but the interest to simply tidy up or to clean up is not really considered to be tsorech makomo, a need for the actual space. If I'm actually sitting there, if I'm using that part of the countertop to be able to, you know, prep more food or be able to plate more food, lay out more food, so that'd be something else. Just want to be conscious whenever we're using these kinds of kalim that we do so in a way that afterwards they're really deposited wherever it is that we want them, because once they're put down, you really can't move them anymore. That's true of kitchen shears. It's true of scissors. It's true of classic case, hammer in the walnuts. Who is still cracking walnuts? I don't know. But if you know anyone, this would apply for anybody who's still cracking their own walnuts by hand or by hammer, coconut, whatever. Other things, can opener. Can opener is probably a kli shemalachta la'isser. You can employ it in a way that would be mutter. But generally speaking, default setting is that it's a kli shemalachta la'isser. Just want to be very, very careful and conscious of how you put it down afterwards. On the topic, many pots and pans, probably most pots and pans, are considered to be a kli shemalachta la'isser or kalim shemalachtam la'isser. It's true that we do also serve in pots and pans and maybe even pick directly out of pots and pans when nobody's looking. But for the most part, pots and pans are cooking implements. They're cooking tools. You can't cook on Shabbos. Pots and pans are likely kalim shemalachtam la'isser. So you just want to be careful. It's not to say that you absolutely can't use it, but it's probably a kli shemalachta la'isser. If it's a kli shemalachta la'isser, be very, very conscious of where you're putting it after use. Colander. Colander is a kli shemalachta la'isser. Usually it's difficult to think of a way in which you might use a colander in a manner that would be mutter on Shabbos. But I think we just had this just happened this past Shabbos. Let's say washing berries or something like that. right? So you can usually wash them in the actual container that they come in. They're usually perforated at the bottom, so you could just rinse them like a hard plastic container of grapes, or even the bag that grapes come in, container of blueberries. I don't know what else. Strawberries, raspberries, blackberries obviously require much more invasive care than just rinsing them. But other kinds of fruit that you could basically just rinse, so you could really put in a colander. You could put in a colander and you can just run water right through them. That's not really considered to be a tarovis. That's not really considered to be an act that itself is usser. Problem is that the kli that you're using, the kli that you're employing, is a kli shemalach tol isser. So you want to just be very, very careful and very conscious of using it in the manner that would be mutter, and then making sure that when you're done using it, it's put in a place that you'll no longer need to move it or have an interest in moving it thereafter. It's in the sink and it just can remain in the sink and you can walk away from it. So a lot to be said here about the point of misparayim, worth considering these things whenever you come upon these kalim. So yes, mutter to the actual act is mutter. Just be conscious of how you're using and where you're leaving the kli that you're employing to actually do that work. Now, so it's mutter to cut the string. What about removing the string? So removing the string is more problematic because removing the string would really be an act of borer. You're effectively removing string from a tarovis. It's a mixture at this point, not unlike removing bones from chicken or from fish. So once the string is bound up in the meat, to then pull the string out, that would be problematic because of borer. You want to handle that in the same way that you handle all borer, which is that you want to cut it away with enough of the meat that's actually on it so that it, in of itself, is its own mixture. So this way you're not separating the psoles, the string, the waste from the food, but rather you are separating a sample size of the mixture from the rest of the food. That would be mutter. There's a sizable enough piece of meat that's actually on the string. You could also just very carefully dissect and pull the meat off of the string rather than pulling the string off the meat. So in all likelihood, I'm sorry to get into the really getting into the weeds here, but imagine you have that, I don't know, whatever it is, you know, whether it's a roast that's been tied, or let's say an individual capon or something like that that's tied, sitting either on the carving platter, cutting board, carving plate, whatever, or your own individual plate. So you probably want to do is cut off a sizable enough piece so that you have both meat and also string, shift that over to the side of the plate. And then once that's over to the side, you can sort of bring some of the meat back. But this way the string is where it is. You don't get into issues of trying to then pick out bits of string from the main, you know, like the prime real estate smack dab in the middle of the plate. You remove it as part of the tarovis, as part of the mixture, and then you grab some of that meat back. So that would be the best way of dealing with it. B'Shabbos also lehotzio mishumis or boer, otherwise you couldn't remove the string. Of yom tov mutar lehotzio, much the same way that we find that acts of boer that you're performing while actually eating directly engaged in achila is mutar on yom tov, would be usser on Shabbos. Okay, now what about stitching it up in the first place? For the most part, irrelevant when it comes to Shabbos because there is only so much food prep that we're really engaged in to begin with. But then there are other issues also that come up on Shabbos with respect to cutting the string and other issues, even just the handling of the meat and doing the sort of things that are suggestive even of cooking. What about in Yom Tov? B'Yom Tov gam mutar l'tfor divrei ma'achal. You could even sew the food closed, again, if it's part of what's needed for food prep. Kagon of mimula. Let's say you are cooking stuffed chicken capon or a veal roast or something like that. So stitching it up afterwards would be acceptable on yantif. This is as long as the actual chut, the string or the yarn, whatever it is that's being used, is actually severed from the spool, from the rest of the spool. And also that it's already been threaded from Erev Yontif. So this may already be going to an extent that we likely were not prepared for. So maybe this all becomes academic. But that needle actually needs to be threaded ahead of time. Otherwise, there are potential tikkun kli issues. Certainly, it has to be severed because otherwise it would be a problem of mechatech on Yontif, of severing the exact amount of thread that you need. There would also be these tikkun kli issues and the like when it comes to threading the actual needle. Now, once you do have, let's just imagine that you have that length of string, once you've sewn the entire way through, and then there's some additional length that's still there, you could get rid of that, you could cut that. That's not really considered to be mechatech. Mechatech is when I sever a given piece of material that I want, like paper towels, toilet paper. This is why we don't do these things on Shabbos, foil, or even on Yontif. Plastic wrap, et cetera, parchment paper. So doing so with a piece of string would also be problematic. Here, I already had the piece of string. It was already measured the size. It was already cut. Now I'm just getting rid of the excess. Getting rid of the excess is not really an issue of mechatech. So that would be mutter. Sure, if possible, without actually cutting it, yisrof es she'iris achut. If the remainder could just be burnt off, that would be better. V'lo yachtoch. Rather than actually cutting it. I don't know how much. Quick poll. Anybody ever actually stitch up a veal roast? I feel like these things aren't done anymore. I feel like this is one of the many bits of food prep that we've outsourced to the good people at Gourmet Glot. Yeah. That's what it seems like from my informal poll here. Okay. We'll be very impressed otherwise. Also, even the Gourmet Glot version, right? When it comes pre-pickled and whatever, it doesn't come in, it's not actually stitched up anymore. It's in a hairnet. Yeah. It's in one of those, fast food restaurant, lunch lady type of hairnet sleeves that it's just forced into. And then it's tied off. It's like the modern, it's like the veal roast equivalent of the challan bags, just makes cleanup and it just adds that extra degree of ease. So I don't know how relevant the actual process in its totality is, but still some interesting points of halacha along the way, issues of mechatech and other things to be mindful of, greater leniency in general when it comes to Yom Tov than obviously when it comes to Shabbos. Here's really a big one. This is something that really does come up pretty often, the issue of tzviya ba'ochlin, question of dying foods. And this can come up in ways that are direct and it can come up in ways that are rather indirect. So first and foremost, ein iser tzviya ba'ochlin. So as a baseline, there is no such thing. Tzviya, dying, tzoveya, is absolutely a malacha. It's part of the laundering or part of the process of manufacturing the different types of material that they needed to use in the use and the construction of the Mishkan. Different types of wool, etc., the tapestries and the parochas and those kinds of things. So they needed to dye. They needed to dye the wool and the other kinds of fabric. So this applies to fabric. This applies to material, but it really does not apply to food. Ein iser tzviya ba'ochlin. Now, when is that the case? Kol od lo yiskaven l'tzviyas hamachal. As long as you don't have kavana for the dyeing of the food. El arak l'tikun o shipur ta'amo. Rather, you're doing this just to create, to make the food better. This is how you make the recipe, and the fact that it changes color might even be a nice, might even be a welcome and pleasant fringe benefit, but it's not what you are directly attempting to accomplish. O shipur ta'amo, you're trying to improve the taste. I'm trying to improve the taste. It so happens that it also becomes, gives it this nice blush. And now it's got this red kind of hue to it. So be it. It's a nice thing, but that's not really what I'm gunning for. What I'm actually trying to do is just to improve the taste and the flavor. Therefore, it is mutter. Obviously, very, very old minhag to make tea essence before Shabbos. If you're unfamiliar, if you do use tea bags on Shabbos and use them in a kli shlishi, obviously, I think we spoke about this one of these shiurim. But if you're unfamiliar, so tea essence is prepping basically tea concentrate in advance of Shabbos. So if you're not going to be using tea bags on Shabbos, then what you would do is you take six tea bags or whatever, eight tea bags, and leave them all steeping, brewing in one cup of hot water. If you have them in one cup of hot water, it makes this super heavily concentrated cup of tea. So that then if you fill up a cup, a mug of hot water on Shabbos, you can pour out just a little, you know, just a couple of ounces from that super heavy tea concentrate. And that makes basically one normal cup of tea. So what happens when you do that? What are you trying to do? Trying to make a cup of tea. What ends up happening? What ends up happening is that that gives the tea, the water, this blush. It makes it into a far more pleasing kind of color. So that's true. That does happen. But that's not really the kavana. The kavana, first and foremost, is simply to create a cup of tea for the sake of creating the cup of tea. This is what a cup of tea is. And you're doing it more for the flavor than for anything else. Yain Edom, omits petal, sochmayin chayotze
b'hen. Yeah. So if tea bags are okay to use on Shabbos, why would some, are there some people that don't hold that tea bags are okay to use?
Yeah, tea bags fall into the category of what's known as kali habishal. There are a handful of things that Chazal considered to be kali habishal and that poskim have considered to be kali habishal, things that cook very, very, very easily. So the question is, if things cook very, very easily, what does that mean vis-a-vis the different sorts of kalim that you can put them in? So according to many poskim, it means that they can be cooked. They can be cooked as long as the water is above yatzalah, this bow. Most prominently, Rav Moshe Feinstein held that once water has been transferred into a kli shlishi, nothing can be cooked in it, even kali habishal. So that would be the divide. If I have a tea bag and I know that tea leaves are kali habishal, they cook very, very easily. So is it mutter for me to put them in a kli shlishi and beyond? Or is it usher for me to put that into anything that is yatzaledes, that's above, you know, whatever, 90 some odd degrees, which is a lousy cup of tea anyway. You know, even if it's a kli shlishi, kli revi'i, kli chamishi. So most prominently and most popularly, Rav Moshe Feinstein was mekel in that regard, which is why many people do use tea bags, again, as long as they're being used in a kli shlishi. So that means from the urn to another cup to another cup. But that would be the reason why people wouldn't. That would at least be reason number one. There are other issues also. There are issues potentially of schita, of wringing out, squeezing out the tea bag on Shabbos. There are potential issues of borer with using a tea bag. And how you go about, let's say, extracting, or how you don't go about extracting those last few drops from the actual tea bag. When you pick the tea bag up out of the tea, and you're waiting for the last few drops to sort of come out of the tea bag, so you go like you try to time it perfectly, right? You want the last drop of tea to come out, and then make a clean break over to the other side of the plate. So you don't want it to like splash on the cup, on the side of the cup, and then you drink it and you get tea on your face. So you're waiting for those last few drops to come out before depositing it like on the plate or the saucer or whatever. That's an issue of borer. You're effectively using a kli. The tea bag's a kli. You're using a kli to separate between the tea leaves and the liquid, the tea that's actually inside of them. So there are other issues also, other complications. Most critically is really this issue of bishul. So Rav Moshe Feinstein held that it was mutter as long as you go about making them in this manner. Even if people are going to be somich on that, it could just be for either, you know, family minug or really ease, convenience, whatever, that just we make tea essence and that's what it is. Or because they are being machmir for those opinions that Rav Moshe argued with. Those would be the reasons to use tea essence as opposed to using tea bags. So at any rate, let's assume though that there's either tea essence or something like tea essence that's now going to darken the liquid. If you're using a tea bag, I think that the reason why he's speaking about tea essence is because Shmir Shabbos Kochasa probably doesn't hold to the idea of using tea bags on Shabbos. But if you're using a tea bag, same issue, same question, that when you use a tea bag and you put a tea bag in a cup of water and a cup of hot water, you're also changing the color of the tea. And frankly, that's like a welcome. I have this thing. This is like one of my things. When they do a complete comprehensive psychological study on me, this will be in the write-up, that I like either a clear mug or one that's white on the inside. That's like my ideal, because I like to see the tea. And when it's like dark on the inside or black on the inside or green on the inside, it obscures the whole experience of drinking tea for me in the first place. Now, I can't proudly admit that because I understand it makes me sound a little bit crazy. or off balance. But I do proudly admit it with respect to Hilchos Shabbos, meaning despite the fact that, yes, of course, we enjoy and we benefit. You eat with your eyes first. So, of course, you enjoy and you benefit from the fact that it's now much more pleasing and it's much more attractive than it was if it was just clear liquid, clear, regular, drab water. That's not the point. The point is you're making tea. You're not just trying to dye the liquid red. You're trying to make a cup of tea. If it so happens that it also becomes dyed. And even if you enjoy that, so be it. But that doesn't change the halacha. So this is true of tea. This is true. Here are some other examples. Yain edomo mitz peta lesoch mayim v'chayotze baza. Or if, let's say, you pour red wine into a drink or into water. Petel, literally, petel is a raspberry, but petel in, like, you know, petel, the syrup, like the, it's like Israeli Kool-Aid. Israeli Kool-Aid is petel. It's a syrup that you mix with water and it makes this, you know, drink for kids. So what about that? So pouring that into water also, it certainly changes the color. It's supposed to change the color. By the way, just a very, very interesting point made here at the bottom. I think it's worth taking note of. Really interesting. Whenever he quotes Rosh Shlomo Zalman, that's when these footnotes start to pop a little bit. So Vishamati over, I can't really highlight it, but if you could see the cursor down over here. So he says as well, Vishamati me'agun Rosh Shlomo Zalman arba shlita. Zatzal, zecher tzadik v'kadosh l'vracha, really. The legabe mitz petel, afcha sha'atzeva eino ba'ofin tivi. Even though it's not even natural. The colors, the dyes are added. It's not. I don't think petel has ever met an actual petel in its life. There's no actual strawberry or a raspberry in petel or whatever other. No matter what the flavor is, it's always called petel. It's lemon petel. So there are no natural dyes and that they're and even if they are natural, you know, when like natural color added, still that's a dye that's being added to the product in order to make it a particular color, so that when you then add the product into water, it turns the water that color. That's the goal, that's the idea. It's in part to make it more appealing by changing the color. So despite that fact, such an interesting point. Maybe then you would say, if that's part of the purpose and they're specifically adding dyes into the product so that it changes the color, it changes the hue specifically of the cup of water. It's not just a natural fringe benefit. They are adding that specifically in order to make that happen. Anybody from my door remember Crystal Pepsi? No, nobody remembers Crystal Pepsi? Come on. No, like children of the 80s.
Yes.
Yes. Crystal Pepsi. Yeah, with the Van Halen music in the background. It's very, very exciting. Crystal Pepsi. Wow, this is getting drunk. Lasted for, I think, all of 2 months, and people went back to drinking regular Pepsi. Why? It's the same stuff, but we associate clear with, like, Sprite and 7-Up, and Pepsi's supposed to be Pepsi. So it was all the rage for all of 2 months, and then it went away. They add dyes. They add dyes to make these things more appealing, to make soda and to make iced tea and to make Kool-Aid and to make Powerade more appealing. So maybe it should change things. So Shlomo Zalman felt not. Again, these are being added not for the sake of the flavor. They don't taste like anything. Red dye 40 doesn't taste like anything. It just makes kids go crazy. When you add that product to a cup of water, first of all, if nothing else, you're using it as a gauge to think about how much more it needs. Is it thick enough yet? Is there enough syrup? Is it too light? Is it too heavy? Kedil Adah says, Kamosa petel shirotze, to determine how much petel he wants. Mikol Malkum nevertheless says, Yerushalma Zalman, Kamay Shemotr Litin Tamtis Te Toch Hamayim, just like it's mutter to put the tea essence into a cup of water, share sham at seva hu tivi, where granted that's natural. It's going to be a natural byproduct, natural fringe benefit, even if you will. So similarly here, kach gamba zef agav shat seva nasa al yidei adam, even though it's being added, it's man-made, it's manufactured, it's fabricated, it's not real, it's being added. Again, even if it's natural, even if instead of red dye number 40, it's, beet juice concentrate or whatever it is. Point is, it's still being added for the sake of dye, for the sake of changing the color and changing the appearance of the actual final product. Nevertheless, Shlomo Zalman says that it's mutter. It's an interesting thing to think about. Just wanted to make that point and bring that up. Okay, So let's continue here with Tzviya Ba'ochen. So V'nachon Lihimana Minasinas Chomer Tzoveh. That's an interesting lashon, by the way. It's ideal. It would be good and proper to refrain from placing an actual food dye, Chomer Tzoveh, something that's actually going to dye the food. Gam Keshachomer Hu Atzmo Necha, even if the dye is going to be eaten. So meaning even if this binds itself to the rest of the food, even if it becomes incorporated into the food as all food dyes do, and it becomes part of the food and you end up eating it, nevertheless, you really shouldn't put that in food. If the only reason why you're doing it is because you want to change the makeup and the color of the actual food. All the more so. All the more so, it is usher to place actual dye. I think what he's talking about first is putting in a food. Granted, it's a food, but you're really putting it there almost expressly for the purpose of changing the color. Now he's saying all the more so to put an actual dye in the food. That would really be usher. Kasher ain kol kavan al ochlo ki im liafuso. My kavan is not that I want to eat it at all. I just want it to be beautiful. Let's say, here's a clear instance where my intention isn't to drink it at all. Let's say I have, a vase full of flowers, but I forgot the flowers. So, I forgot that I didn't buy flowers before Shabbos. So let's at least make the water beautiful. So, let's say just you have, I don't know, vases of water or containers of flasks of water, you know, decorative that are around the home to add some kind of dye in order to make them more pleasing. That certainly would be a problem. That would certainly be a problem because then there's really no leniency of the fact that ain't tzviya ba'ochlin. So I think the distinction is, are you adding something into what really is a food and you're planning on eating it and consuming it, or are you adding something into something that could be construed as a food, could be considered a food, but in this instance is not a food because you're not planning on eating it? Even if his kavanah is really just to change the taste, make the flavor, make the taste better, it is ideal to place the coloring agent in first, and then after ba'aleim limzog es hamayim, that would be ideal. So this comes up at my table multiple times over the course of a single suda, because we're not perfect, but at the very least, we basically know that we drink a lot of juice on Shabbos, but we at least know that juice doesn't get drunk like straight up. You need to dilute it. It's like we're a bunch of like juice alcoholics. Like you at least gotta water it down. So the shaila is, so what goes in first? Is it the seltzer or the juice? Ideally juice should go in first, seltzer should go in second, so that there's no shaila whatsoever of actually dyeing the liquid. I heard, interestingly, and I never got to follow up on this, but I heard that I think it was Rav Shmuel, may have been Rav Shalom, but I think it was Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky came to do sort of an open Q&A before Pesach, I think at the Philadelphia Colo a few years ago. One of the shilas that was asked was if you mostly have white wine or if you prefer white wine. So there's a mila of having red wine at the Seder for a whole number of reasons. It's representative of all kinds of different things. One of which is actual dam of the children who were the Jewish children who were thrown into the Nile. There's a mile of having red wine. So what if a person either prefers white wine or they mostly have white wine, pouring in some red wine just to give it like a little blush, you know, just for a little red tinge. Is that okay? And I think that Shiloh was first. What about mixing them? Rav Shmuel said, that's fine. And then what about if you're adding it really just because you want the color? He said, that's also fine. It's also fine. So now it happens to be that even here, as the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa mentions it, it's really best. It's best to refrain. It's not ideal. Where he really uses the term usser and where he really speaks about this being a real isser and really prohibited is more when you're dealing with something that isn't going to be consumed at all. But if it is going to be consumed, it's really best not to. It's not ideal. It should be refrained from. It could be for the sake of a dvar mitzvah. That's really what this is based upon. Certainly in that instance, it would be best to avoid doing that kind of thing unless it was for the flavor also. But perhaps there's some leniency there as well, even when really the kavana is to dye the actual drink or to dye the actual food. So certainly when it comes to something like, there'd have to be other issues, lush, lisha, whatever. But let's say, cake icing or something like that, just to put in food coloring, just for the sake of changing the color, that is really best avoided. Yeah, Natalie.
You're saying if it's for flavor also, then there isn't an issue of coloring. I'm thinking vanilla ice cream and fudge, let's say.
And the concern is what? That you're dyeing the surface of the ice cream?
So you're kind of changing like the white ice cream with the chocolate, but you're saying if it's for a flavor enhancement, then it's...
So first of all, yes, if it's for a flavor enhancement, that's fine. It's also, I think it'd be... See, even if that was just for appearances, when what we're speaking about is two things that become an actual substance that really becomes dyed. Meaning, look, this happens all the time on my own plate, right? That a couple of foods touch each other and it changes the color, right? It changes the color, at least of the surface of the food. And that's really what would be happening in a bowl of ice cream. Put chocolate syrup on top of a scoop of ice cream. Yeah, it changes it. You might say that like dirties the ice cream more than that it comprehensively changes the appearance of the ice cream. It's all topical. It's all superficial. It's not really changing the actual makeup of the ice cream itself. This would be more like what happens when you mix like these kinds of situations where certainly putting food dye and mixing it into icing or pudding or something like that, in order to make it more fun, or even taking something that's really a food substance and mixing it into something so that other substance develops a completely new color. Orange juice into seltzer makes the seltzer completely orange now, or completely yellowed. So it's comprehensive. It's through and through. I don't think that would even be a shiloh, almost apart from the issue of the fact that yes, it's being done for flavor, it's being done for taste. Even apart from that, I don't even think that would really be a problem of tzviya ba'ochlin, even if that issue wasn't at hand.
Well, if it was mixed, it would turn all brown.
If you're really mushing and incorporating, and that's like part of it, yeah. If you're spooning it over again, those are the kinds of things that incidentally happen just by way of derech achila, whatever it is that we're eating on some level or another. That if you put, you dip a piece of schnitzel into ketchup, so it's turning it red. It's not really. You have red on top of the schnitzel, and yeah, maybe it absorbs some of it, but you're not really dyeing the actual food through and through in any which way. Either way, it is academic. That would absolutely be acceptable. It would absolutely be mutter, because it's really being done for the taste and for the flavor and to the dish, rather than just purely for the sake of dyeing it. If the kids just say, "Oh, this is going to be so gross. I'm going to turn it brown. I'm going to turn it green. I'm going to turn it red," and mash up the sprinkles and turn it into powder and like mix it in, so then maybe you'd start approaching something that's more problematic. Otherwise, general rule of thumb, ain't tzviya ba'ochlin, unless really it's being done expressly for the purpose of changing the color. But for the most part, when we're just mixing foods, this isn't really problematic. Similarly, and this is important because we were speaking about the possibility of molid when it came to food, when it comes to whipped cream potentially, when it comes to seltzer, at least potentially. We're talking about the possibility of molid. So I think I mentioned this last time that one of the early poskim, the Beis Yitzchak actually, he says that making seltzer on Shabbos is a problem of molid, not unlike, I think he compares it to molid reach. Molid reach, spoke about last time, is when you perfume clothing or other kinds of utensils. And this was something that was usually done upon completion of the manufacturing process, that you would want them to smell really enticing and beautiful. So that was something that was typically done. And then as upkeep, spraying deodorant or perfume or cologne directly onto clothing, that's a problem on Shabbos of molid reach of creating a brand new scent within that item. So that's not an issue when it comes to ochlin either. Ein iser molid reach ba ochlin im al yedei hosafa sareach machshir asa ochlin lachila o mashbiach hatam. If it's being done again for the same reason, I don't care just about creating a brand new fragrance. It's not really the point. The point is that I'm adding the sort of spices, seasonings, flavorings, what have you, that make the actual food better, that make the food more presentable, that make the food more enjoyable. That's really why I'm doing it. This is why you can put, there's nothing wrong with, a little bit of cinnamon in the, let's say tea even, right? The herbal teas. I mean, it smells, you can, I don't know that tea smells any better than water, maybe marginally, but herbal tea is great. I mean, nana tea, it's delicious. Peppermint tea is great. Lemon tea, whatever. Put a little bit of vanilla on top of your dessert and it suddenly smells that much better. So the purpose is for the point of the flavor and to finish the actual dish, not really just for the sake of adding additional flavors. Scent or fragrance. Let's finish off this topic here and then we'll be able to start a brand new one. Yirtz Hashem next time. Ein lekapel mapios in the yar betzurim yuchedes. So it's usher to fold napkins into a particular shape. Kederach shregil nasos lichvod orchim, like you might do in order to honor guests. So today we have a hard time imagining why would I need to do anything that would show off to the guests? How much can they possibly see from out on the front lawn? So no kids. Back in the day, guests used to come inside your house also. Aval motor lekaplan kipul ragil. But it would be mutter to fold them. I mean, you could fold them in the regular fashion to throw them into, like turkey tails and all those kinds of things would be problematic. That could be an issue of either of tikkun mana. He actually says because it's comparable to binyan, or fine line between tikkun mana and binyan in the first place. But it's but it would be like bona. It would be like creating something anew or creating something brand new. Just folding them over is not a problem of tikkun mana. It's not a problem of perfecting whatever it is that you've already gotten. So he quotes from Rav Shlomo Zalman that there's no such thing as tikkun kli when it comes to paper, when it comes to something disposable. Could be potentially you would have this issue with cloth napkins. He actually mentions this. If your cloth napkins have a very, very clear and identifiable crease, it might actually be a problem with tikkun kli, which is why many have the minog of waiting only until after Shabbos to fold their talesim. To fold things right on the crease and improving that crease could be a problem of perfecting the actual kli. If that's the case with cloth napkins, we were using cloth napkins for a while. Baruch Hashem, those are the kinds of things that they vary indirectly. There is a direct an indirect correlation, meaning direct correlation, meaning to say with the desire and the interest of using cloth napkins with the number of kids that you have sitting at the table. So Baruch Hashem, but I think we still have them in a closet someplace. Either way, the creases don't really stay intact. That's not something that I don't think many people consider. You usually just slip it through a napkin ring and that's that. Mapis shel bad, mapit shel bad she niftecha mikipula, that's come undone from its fold. Ein lachzor ul kapla shuv. So again, if it's made of actual linen or actual cloth, then you shouldn't fold it back right on that crease. Kumavur lehalon. Just like a talis, as I'd mentioned. Final if here, final os, he says, mutter lahatzmid salachas tinok l'shulchan al yidei vacuum shel gumi o plastic bitach tita. He's talking about suction cups. So a kiddie tray, like on top of a high chair that maybe either inserts or is pressed down onto a surface with suction cups, that's okay. You can use those suction cups on Shabbos. That's not considered to be like tikkun kli or anything like that. So that he doesn't overturn the tray and everything comes crashing down. Oh, they'll find a way, believe you me. How to exactly heat up that kind of this kind of thing, how to heat up the food on it, how to go about doing it on Shabbos. That is another conversation for another time. But that brings us to the end of this really fun kind of potpourri. This was the section for you. If you're part of the ADD generation, as I consider myself, then this was a great parak. A lot of just really fast moving, a lot of topics covered. I think if anybody has anything specifically that they would like to cover next time, please let me know. Don't hesitate to reach out. I think otherwise, all things being equal, we'll probably take a look at Hilchos Tochein, grinding, chopping, cutting into small pieces, which has a lot of relevance, very, very relevant, very important for Halacha L'maisa. Okay, see everybody next time.
Sorry, question.
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
So disposable napkins, you said, is okay or is not?
Disposable napkins, okay, certainly to fold in a regular fashion, like to fold on the fold, and you're making a fold, right? Fold over, fold in half, fold diagonally, to make into some other, you know, creation, like to origamify them, would be problematic.
What about like pinching the middle? Is that like that turkey
thing? I mean, into a fan and then, you know, having it stand upright or into a rabbit or a swan or whatever. That would be a problem. Pinching it at the end and then just like dropping it into a glass. That's what you mean?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Okay. All
right. But making like a creative paper folded napkin to make it into an interesting shape, you're saying would be a problem.
Yeah, even for a paper. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Even with disposable ones?
Sounds like it, yeah.
And both with disposable and cloth.
Disposable and cloth. I don't know that cloth would really like hold up the same way. I don't know how feasible that is for cloth, but potentially yes. The other issue that comes with cloth is that if theoretically anyway, you have very, very fine creases, very clearly defined creases on the linen napkins. So then refolding them back onto those lines, back onto those creases is in of itself problematic on Shabbos because of tikkun kli. Not unlike refolding a Shabbos or folding a pair of pants right on the crease. So that would be a problem for regular napkins, but otherwise just folding them regularly would be fine.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
So people folding their talisim is okay on Shabbos?
So not everyone holds that, not all poskim hold that folding even on a crease is necessarily tikkun kli. It seems like it's pretty widespread minhag. But even so, there are ways to fold your talis or your pants or whatever without folding it on the crease. I mean, I do it every week. You fold it, you just don't fold on the lines, basically. So, you don't quite bring the two corners together and you just keep folding in half. You never actually end up on the original creases.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Okay, everyone. Have a wonderful week. See you next time. Again, if anybody has any specific thoughts for a topic next time, if anybody's interested in something specific or particular, please reach out. Let me know. Don't hesitate. And we'll try to tackle it.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All the best. Be well.
Thank you.